This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
All right, welcome everyone. It is 6 o'clock, and I am a stickler for time. So, world's best real estate investing goal setting class. People can straggle in. I know there's some crazy traffic stuff going on. Is it just me who hit that traffic, or did everyone else hit it?
No, it's the cop.
Yeah.
I'm like, tell your person to pull forward.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I guess the railroad tracks at Harmony was blocked, and that's usually my secret way of coming up shield. So. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So upcoming classes, this upcoming Tuesday is going to be the Fixer Upper Nomad Overview. That's the webinars on Tuesday night. You guys are welcome to join those. And that's going to be me teaching those on August 8th. And then we had kind of a block because Brian was going out of town. And so apparently I'm teaching how to select a real estate agent. That topic came up because Tammy's dad passed away on Friday. And so she is up in Illinois right now. And they need to sell mom and dad's house. Mom died earlier this year in like February or January. So now we're gonna have to sell her parents' house. And so we started thinking about, you know, if we're not in the market, what do you look for in order to select a real estate agent? And so it's fresh on my mind. We're gonna be selecting a real estate agent up in Illinois. So I will kind of give you the inside scoop as to what I would look for if I were selecting a real estate agent. And there'll probably be some self-promotion in there about me in this market. But really, it's going to be about our kind of selection of a real estate agent in another market and how you do that.
I'm going to miss you doing self-promotion for the first time.
Well, you know, I'll show off some stuff that other people don't have, and I'll express, you know, this is probably pretty cool if your agent has this. So that's the extent of my self-promotion most of the time.
I figured that class is easy. It's like one slide.
Just use James Orr. In reality, though, I am going to talk about, like, if you're going into a different market, how do you go and select a real estate agent there and some things like that. So that's the context of that class. So there it is. Then after that, August 15th, provided Tammy's back in town, we're supposed to do Cash Flow Explosion, but because I actually have concert tickets for that night, what I was planning on doing is making the recording of the last time I taught that class available. That's supposed to be a webinar. And so I'll just put it up all day long. People can watch it at their leisure. And then the next day I'll take it down as if I presented live at any point you wanted to log in that day. And so that's the night I'm supposed to go to a concert. If she's not back in town, maybe I'm taking my son. I'm not sure. The next one is how to get down payments. So Wednesday, August 16th. How many people are doing Nomad? Anyone? Okay, so Nomads is going to be really easy. There's a whole class on doing this. But this will also be how to build up down payment for doing non-owner-occupant buying. And we'll talk about all the different strategies to come up with down payment for that on August 16th. And then after that, I will teach basically Brian's class on bookkeeping and accounting for Nomads on August 22nd. Basically what that class is, Brian just taught it recently. I know. She's CPA or accounting. So anyway, so here's the deal. So Brian built this really cool spreadsheet. And the first time I saw the spreadsheet, I mean, I saw it on his computer. He pulled it up, but I didn't really look at it. Wasn't really paying attention. But then he came into class and he explained it to everybody. I'm like, actually, that's pretty cool. What I will do is I will go build the web-based version of that spreadsheet so that you can track all of your finances for all the properties and tag them and kind of make them all organized. You'll do the web version. So basically, it's Brian's spreadsheet online. So the web-based version. So that's going to be, what's that?
Are you done?
Oh yeah, it's done.
With coding?
I think so. Is there something I was missing?
Yeah.
Oh, then I need to go build some code. So sometime between now and August 22nd, I'll do some more coding.
That's why I was like, you're not going to have any time between now and then.
What do you mean? All the bookkeeping stuff's done.
Okay.
I thought it was. All right. All right, I'll have to go look at that.
I mean, you were missing an entire month of the year.
I fixed that, though.
Yeah.
I did
like
fix that.
And
it was only in the report. It was only in the report. I missed number 9. Yes, this is absolutely true. You could enter in September accounting stuff, just didn't get displayed. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so now it's fixed. That all works fine. So that's going to be on August 22nd. So that's the upcoming class schedule. Any have questions about the upcoming classes? Awesome. Yes. Yes. So Brian, So Brian actually had to go out of town, and so that has now been switched.
We switched it to where, at the end of August?
I think so.
Okay. I thought you just swapped it out for the 16th.
I didn't.
That's cool.
I didn't because that was already in place.
You didn't have a class for the end of August, and it wasn't in your newsletter, so my guess is you put it there.
That's probably where I put it. I just moved it to the next spot. And so that'll be that class. And blame Brian if you don't like the schedule, because he's the one that made me change it. Yes?
Schedule online?
It is online. It's on Meetup and Craig.com. It's also in the newsletter on the inside page, so you can get it there.
The Tuesday night is only on Learn to Be Rich.
Yeah, the Tuesday night ones are only on Learn to Be Rich. So if you have questions about that. Yes, this is true. And Craig.com has all the Wednesday night ones. LearnToBeRich.com/Meetup. Has all the Tuesday ones because they're webinars versus live. And I don't want to confuse people. All right, any other questions on upcoming class schedule? If you don't like it, blame Brian. All right, cool. Introductions. Who are you and what is your favorite goal setting book, course, or resource? And then important note, please do not take photos of slides or record audio or video of NCREG presentations. I do record them, provide a technology cooperation to make them available to clients. Carl, who are you and what is your favorite goal setting book, something, something, or something, whatever it says up there. Insane Productivity. I've never heard of that one. Darren Hardy is the guy from Success Magazine.
Yes.
He wrote Cashvertising and something else, didn't he?
Compound Effect.
Compound Effect. That's the other one. Yeah, that's interesting. I never heard of that one. All right, put it on my list. Thank you. Welcome. Donna?
Hi, my name is Donna, and I do a lot of reading, but I don't think I can quite pinpoint a goal setting
book. Okay.
So, but I wrote down the first one.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll go check it out. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Anna?
I'm Anna Silva. My favorite, I'm not sure. I don't know the name. I forgot the name of the book, but by Jack Canfield.
Oh, sure. Success Principles or something Focus?
Success Principles.
Success Principles is one? Good. Yeah, it's a good book. Thank you. Welcome. Hello.
Hello. My name is Joe Krebinghaus. I don't think I really have any goal setting books or courses that I've used as probably why I'm here.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Appreciate that. Hi.
Hi. I'm Julie, and I wouldn't say, I mean, there's a lot of books out there, but like one of them that comes to my mind that I've read recently, I don't know if it's necessarily a goal setting book, but The One Thing by Gary Keller.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a great book.
Just to give you something to focus on, mm-hmm. to get your goals set, you know?
Yeah.
So anything that I read and come upon that feels that, you know, matches my character and keeps me on track.
Totally. Yeah, the One Thing book is really good. That's definitely worth reading. It's not on my list for tonight, but it's definitely good. Thank you. Welcome. Hello.
I'm Brandon. Our goal setting book, I would probably say Good to Great.
I've never read that one, actually.
Good to Great.
Yeah, Good to Great. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. Welcome. Hello.
Hi. I'm Paul. Out there. Most recent one that I've read is called No Excuses, and it's by David Neenan, and it's a pretty good book. I like that one a lot.
Cool. Isn't that where you work?
I work at Neenan Art Construction, yeah. Yeah, he's the CEO. He wrote the book.
Oh, awesome.
It's good.
That's cool. What's it called? No Excuses?
No Excuses.
Huh. Yeah. Brian Tracy has a book by the same title. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thanks. Welcome. Peter?
Don't have a favorite book for goal setting.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Hello.
I'm Lewis, and probably similar book, absorbing the information.
Okay, awesome. That sounds good. Thanks. Welcome. Hello.
I'm Zach. I don't know if the necessarily a goal setting book, but one I finished a while back that I really enjoyed was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Okay.
Really focusing on productivity.
Yeah. Why not just have 10 times as much productivity and work 40 hours?
Because I like to do stuff.
That's right. It's pretty good. Awesome. Thanks. Welcome. Hello.
Hi. My name is Beth. I don't really have a specific goal setting book, but I did just get this goal setting like journal.
Nice.
And it's a little bit hokey when you think about it, but it sets like a big goal for 100 days and then breaks it down into 10-day sprints and then every day breaks it down.
So cool. You're going to really like tonight then. Awesome. Thanks. Welcome. I will give you a hint. Everybody in the back row, you will want someplace to write. So you'll want to try to grab a seat before someone else comes in and grabs them. So if you are sitting in the back row and don't have a table in front of you, I would encourage you to make a move and be awkwardly uncomfortable now so that you're not awkwardly uncomfortable later in the class. Thank you. Hi, Denise. Just wander through life aimlessly. I'll just achieve whatever goals I kind of stumble upon. Awesome. There's going to be sheets of paper on the side here, and then there's pens up here in the fishbowl if you need them. Maybe pass the fishbowl around, and then the sheets of paper. I'd grab at least two sheets, maybe three. Brian.
My name is Brian Williams. That's who I am. My favorite goal-setting resource is probably, as James well knows, Dwayne The Rock Johnson yelling, focus.
That's your goal-setting resource? Like a YouTube video, like a 15-second video of him doing that?
I haven't seen that, so I'll go watch it.
So I'm doing my marathon, and Brian's like, I'm like texting Brian while I'm doing my marathon, which probably isn't a good idea to begin with. But then he's like sending back YouTube videos of Dwayne saying, focus, focus. Yeah.
In all seriousness, the one thing is very good. We taught half a class on that somewhere here.
We should do a whole class on that, actually.
Yeah, we should. I have a resource that probably no one else other than James could be asked for in this room actually has, which is core competency cards from Microsoft.
I have those.
You do. You asked me for them.
I know I asked you for them. I just need to figure out where they would be.
Yeah, so it's like 36 cards that basically cover the entire gamut, and they give you level 1 through 4, and you can kind of read and figure out where you are and figure out what you need to work on. But it's super powerful for people that have employees or they want to grow themselves, or they have a manager who's saying, hey, you're not great at this. So I've kept them for all these years because they are highly valuable. And
You still have them? Very interesting. All right, cool. I might want to look at those again because I have not looked at them.
You have a copy. It's a PDF.
All right.
You actually suggested that we could do class on
this. We should teach a class on this.
We should.
All right. Why don't you write down some of these class ideas? Maybe get another sheet of paper or something. One thing and that thing. Oh, Allison, why don't you email me, please? Email me the one teach a class on the one thing and Microsoft core competency cards.
Level 4 in uploading work to others.
Me too. Brian says I'd like to make an offer. I say thank you very much. Tammy, would you please write an offer for Brian?
Can you text me or can you email me a reminder and I'll just text him? He'll be like, I'm not gonna see them.
This is true. This is true. Curtis.
I'm Curtis. I guess my favorite resource is the local Wednesday night shindigs.
Oh yeah, yeah, those are pretty good. They got a lot of goal setting stuff in them too. Thanks. Welcome. Hello. Did you see yourself in the newsletter?
I did not.
It's good, right?
Sure
I told you. I told you. I said I was sorry. I don't know if it's not that one. It's the one for August 1st. Yeah. Yeah. You saw the one from August 1st, right? That's right. That's what the caption says, right? That's true too. Pinterest works good for goal setting?
You can look anything up on Pinterest. You can find goal setting sheets, budget sheets.
Really? My son told me about MySpace and Pinterest at the same time, so I assume that they were both kind of... Well, I mean, he kind of told me about them in the same sentence, so I just assumed that they were both kind of funky. Sounds pretty good. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Hello. Awesome. Thanks. Welcome. Let's start back row. Allison.
I'm Allison. I don't know what the question is.
Question is, what's your favorite goal setting book, course, or resource?
Not a clue.
I stumped you. Awesome. Well, thank you. Welcome. Kelly, with the green name tag.
We're still frazzled from getting here, so.
Was it crazy traffic?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty
horrible.
Insane. Well, thank you. Welcome. Hello. Is it Anna?
The traffic was horrible.
Oh, no worries. Is it Anna? It is Anna.
Alicia.
Jim. You guys want to share with your best goal-setting resource? Goal-setting resource? Book, course, or resource for goal-setting?
Yours.
Mine? Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Hello. Okay. Awesome. Welcome. Thank you. Hello.
My name is Chris. I've actually just started reading The Intelligent Investor.
Sure. Benjamin Graham. Yeah, great book. Yeah, awesome. Thanks. Welcome.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay. My name is Royce. My favorite goal-setting book, I really like The Connect Rule. I actually like Planner better than the book.
Really? We're going to talk a lot about that tonight. It's one of my favorites. You sent me a video? No. No, that's from Grit.
One-word titles.
Yeah, they are confusing. Allison, who are you and what's your favorite goal-setting book, course, or resource?
Hi, I'm Allison, and I have not ever read a goal-setting book, and I guess the best resource I've had for goal-setting has been CSU.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you. Welcome. Who did we miss? Did we miss you?
But I do feel there's a story about someone in the Bay Area. 10 years ago, he set up a goal that I'm going to have like a $10 million assets. And so 10 years later, he said, I'm sorry, I did not reach my goal, but I realize I do have like 6.6 million. So I think that's something like you set up a long-term goal and then just trying to bring out every step. That's something I also teach my other investors. How they going to project their steps by steps and to have a long-term goal set and then trying to see how they reach it year by year. So I think step by step. And I always love the 7 Habits.
Mm-hmm. Sure, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey.
I think that's something you can apply to it.
That's awesome. Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, James.
Alicia. Okay.
Equation,
sure.
And it drives me insane.
It drives you insane?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So yeah, the smart formula.
Do you know where that came from?
No,
that's what I use.
It was always drilled into me in the corporate world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just the generic thing that I've always used, and I'm looking for a better resource.
Okay, awesome. Well, I think you'll find some tonight. They're pretty good. So, thank you. Who else did we miss? Oh, you're throwing him under the bus, and you're next.
No, I'm Daniel Walker. I don't have a favorite goal-setting book or resource. We've done fairly well at meeting short-term goals, but they've never really been tethered to anything specific that's long-term.
Okay.
My favorite resource is other people.
Okay. Very cool. Tiffany? That's what I like to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess all my goals have always been stuff that's like physical or something, so I always just have trackers that I make sure that I'm always going towards the right direction instead of away from it. So
awesome. All right, very cool. Well, thank you. Welcome. Did I miss anybody? So I will tell you, the people that are sitting back there and don't have a place to write on, you will probably want to try to sit in a spot that has a spot because you will do some writing tonight. There are sheets of paper here on the end of the table, so if you don't have those, you'll want to grab at least 3 sheets for yourself. If you don't have a pen, there was a bowl of pens wandering around at some point. Oh, here's the paper and the pens. So there's a couple pens left and some paper. There's really not a lot of seats, but if you can grab a table, I would. So that's about all I have to say about that. Anyone who comes in late, they're going to suffer in the back row trying to write on their lap. So, okay, world's best real estate investing goal setting class. I guess I'm pretty humble about my titling, so that's it. So here are some references and recommended study. So I'll talk about some of these. I'm going to have like slides on a whole bunch of stuff, but I'll just kind of give you an idea of what the books are about. So I gave this presentation. I was telling Brian on the phone the other night. I gave this presentation, or a variation of this presentation, not the presentation in its current form, but some stuff related to it. And I had this slide in here. It was probably like 2 or 3 years ago, three or maybe even 4 years ago now. Actually, it was 2012, so it was 5 years ago. And so I had this whole slide up here, and at the time, I had just read most of these books. So it's been a while since I read a lot of these. But the one that we're going to talk about probably the most tonight is going to be Succeed by Heidi Halverson-Grant. If you haven't read that book, I would strongly recommend that you put that at the very top of your list. It's probably the best book on achieving goals that I know of. There's a whole bunch of related ones. Mindset by Carol Dweck talks about whether you have growth mindset or fixed mindset. And so there's a bunch of stuff in there about whether or not you are willing to make changes in order to succeed. So some good stuff in there. Talent is Overrated. It kind of debunks the myth that Amadeus Mozart was this amazing prodigy. It goes and talks about how it's really not raw talent, it's work ethic and the ability to stick through with things and put in the hours and really do a lot of exercise and things like that. That's a really good book. Jeffrey Colvin is the title of that one. Carrots and Sticks by Ian, I'm not sure what it is, Ayers. That's about a really interesting book about rewards and punishments. There's a bunch of studies in there about whether or not you're trying to achieve a goal and you put money on the line that says, if I achieve this goal, I get some reward. Or they also tested if I put money on the line such that if I don't achieve a goal, that money goes to an anti-charity, something that you really hate. So the thing that you hate most in the world, imagine them getting $1,000 if you don't achieve your goal. And does that motivate you more? And so there's a bunch of interesting things in here about carrots and sticks and what actually works and what doesn't work as far as rewarding yourself or punishing yourself for not achieving your goals. So it's a really interesting read. Drive by Daniel Pink's about what motivates people. Pretty interesting one. Spark's one about goal setting. There's also some interesting things in Spark about exercise and the importance of exercise and growing and remembering things and things like that. Ultimate Technique for Success, a pretty interesting book by Ken Roberts. I don't remember a lot of the details, but I remember thinking at the time, this is a really good goal-setting type book. Psycho-Cybernetics, I'm going to talk a little bit about tonight. That's one of the classics. Came out in, I think, 1970s. Maxwell Maltz, Dr. Maxwell Maltz, was a plastic surgeon. And he noticed that when he would go and have someone come in with some type of disfigurement or scarring, that they had this self-image of themselves being ugly, or they were self-conscious about something about their looks or the way that they were kind of put together. And he noticed when he went in and he fixed the physical change to their body, like he went in there and he changed their face, he changed the way they look, he changed their nose, he changed their cheekbones, or whatever it is that they had a problem with, that only a certain percentage of the patients actually felt differently. And that it wasn't the physical manifestation on their face. Part of it was their inner kind of like thought process and how they felt about themselves. And so there's a whole bunch of really interesting stuff in this book, Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. That's not the part of it that I'm going to talk about tonight. The part of it I'm going to talk about tonight is one of their things called the theater of the mind, which is going and imagining yourself on the big screen, achieving whatever it is that you're trying to do. So you imagine your life story and watching it happen, playing out in front of you, and the more details you add, the better. So there's a whole exercise in here he has about that. It's called The Theater of the Mind, which is worth reading. It's an older book. It's like 1970s or so, but there's some pretty, so it's dated. It reads a little funky in some spots, but it's still worth reading. Some really good nuggets in that one. Happiness Advantage by Sean Acor. So he talks about, he's like a Harvard student counselor sort of person who helps kids at Harvard who are going to school there deal with depression. Apparently a lot of kids at Harvard are depressed. Who would have thought? And so basically, he talks about the factors that go into being happy. And one of the interesting things that he discovered was that, which is quite the contrary, you don't become successful and then become happy. It turns out the people that are happiest are the easiest track to be successful. So it's actually the reverse cause and effect. He talks a lot about that. He would argue that, you know, if you're not happy now, you probably should work on that before you really start working on success, because it's easier to achieve success when you're on this positive upward spiral of success where you're happy about things and you're doing more things, you're getting more happy and things like that. So some pretty interesting stuff in there. Goals by Brian Tracy. Brian Tracy, he's probably one of the most verbose prolific guys, you know, if you kind of look at any personal development stuff, he probably has, you know, 20 books out there and a whole bunch of different topics. I find him a little bit hard to kind of read through, but he does have some good stuff. And so a lot of people really resonate with him. For me, it just doesn't click for me, but the goals book is really interesting. You got some good exercises in there on goals and stuff. Personal Power 2 by Anthony Robbins. If you can find a copy of that, now they have the app, you can download it. But if you can actually go onto eBay and find Personal Power 2, not the new Get the Edge crap, because I think that's actually a little bit worse than the Personal Power 2 stuff. If you can go find that on eBay or wherever you can go find it, that's worth reading. That's worth going through. It's actually an audio thing. It's like a 30-day program. They used to sell it on infomercials, late night TV. Really, really good stuff. I think he's got some pretty amazing stuff. And I'm going to talk about some things related to him tonight as well. Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's basically a productivity, how to manage your to-do list, how to manage your tasks, some really good ideas on how to stay organized and be productive. And so that's a really good book. I'm going to talk about some of the stuff for David Allen tonight too. Pomodoro Technique by Francisco Cirillo. Pomodoro Technique is a focusing exercise where you work for, I think, 15 minutes at a time, then you take a certain number of minutes off, and then you work for another 15 minutes, take a certain number of minutes off, work for 15 more minutes, take minutes off, and you do not let yourself get distracted during those 15 minutes. So you only work on one thing at a time. You really put your head down and focus on that. You don't check your email. You don't go check the news sites. You don't check stocks. You don't do anything. You just do 15 minutes of focus exercise, then the 5 minutes or whatever. Does anyone know? Is it 5 minutes afterward?
It's 25 and 15.
25 and 15. Okay.
There's another book that I just read that I think is better than that one. It's called Deep Work, and it goes into that.
Oh, yeah. That's what's his name? Carl Newport, something like that? Cal Newport. Yes, that's actually a really interesting book, too. I probably should have added that one there. But the Pomodoro Technique helps you focus, and it's really good for doing that. And then you actually, during the break period, you get up, you walk around, you answer your emails, you check the stocks, whatever it is, but it allows you to get more stuff done by putting your head down and focusing. So it's an interesting exercise for that. Thou Shalt Prosper by Daniel Lapin, one of my favorite all-time books. And so I would recommend you read that. It's got some stuff about goal setting. It's religiously toned. It's by a rabbi. And so the rabbi talks about, you know, how the Jewish culture, Jewish people, represent a very small percentage of the U.S. population. It's like less than 1% or something ridiculous like that. Yet if you look at the list of the richest people, most successful people, they represent a rather large percentage. And part of it, it's not the religious part of it, it's culture. And so he argues that the culture of the Jewish people, that they encourage their kids to do certain things, and he talks about what those things are and what the success factors are for those. It's actually a really fascinating read and definitely worth reading.
Did he also cover, like, just the fact that where the Jews were when they became, like, attorneys?
Yep.
Because there's a huge segment of the Jewish population that is wealthy, more due to they foresaw that coming, right?
He talks about this, and it's not what you're saying, actually. So he does discuss that. But yeah, it goes into a lot of detail. Really, really good book. He's really thorough. He's also very prolific. This is my favorite book by him. And you can get that on audio or book, but it's really worth listening to. It's very, very, very good stuff. Willpower by Roy Baumeister. That's about self-control and willpower. You know, forcing yourself to do things. There's a whole bunch of science and studies about this, but he really talks a lot about that in there. Then The Secret of Creating Your Future by Tad James is about timeline therapy. The idea that you can go think of your life, and there's a visual way to visualize your timeline as to where your future is according to where you are and where your past is. And then you can actually, and it's different for everybody as an aside, but he basically has you go, and you can go back into memories you have in the past that are holding you back or that haven't been good for you, and you can change those so that you actually reverse those memories, and you can choose to overwrite those bad memories with good memories. And the same thing applies to the future. You can actually go out into the future and have future memories so that you're drawn toward those things. Some people think it's a little touchy-feely, but it's actually pretty practical stuff. All right, any questions on references, recommended study? Now that I've kind of gone through sort of my list, any ones you want to add to that list? Yes, Alicia.
Do you just read one book at a time and stick with that book before you move on to the next one? Or do you read multiple books at the same time?
It's actually a really good question. So, I tend to listen to one audiobook at a time. So if I'm listening to one audiobook, I'm going from the beginning to the end. However, I do have multiple spots in the house where I sit where I read different books. So one white chair upstairs has one book. The other white chair downstairs has a different book. And then the other white chair might have enough of the other book, or my iPad may have another book when I'm reading at Qdoba or something.
Because I sometimes try to read multiple books at the same time, and it just takes so long. So I'm like trying to figure out, do you multitask? Do you just say, okay, this is the book I'm reading, I'm just going to do that until it's the end?
I focus on the one book mostly, but depending on where I sit. Focus. Yeah. Yeah, but I definitely do one audiobook at a time. And I do listen to audiobooks at like multiple speed, like not just one time speed, which allows me to get through stuff a little quicker, which is why I talk so fast too.
1.2?
2, like 2x. Not 2.5, not usually, unless it's like a really slow person. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, 2.5 is not fast.
Yeah, but most of the time it's 2. Occasionally some people I have to move down to like 1.8, but it's really rare, really, really rare. Yes, I probably should have added that on there. Think and Grow Rich, yep.
Yeah, and then Grit is a really good book.
Yeah, by Angela Duckworth. Brian sent me a video. He thought I was going to add that to today's presentation, but that's also very good, too. Yeah, Nappy Hill wrote Think and Grow Rich. And of all of them, Think and Grow Rich isn't actually his best book. Grow Rich with Peace of Mind, which he wrote later in life at the very end of all of his stuff, is actually the best of all the stuff he has. He's a pretty prolific guy, too. In fact, on my cruise to Bermuda, I listened to The Laws of Success. It's one of his monstrous tomes, his first book that he actually wrote. And I found it a little bit hard to get through. A lot of dated references and some really good stuff in there, but it was just really deep stuff that I had a hard time processing through. But it was worth going through. I would never go back and reread it, but it was worth once. Yeah. I mean, Succeed, I'll read multiple times. Thou Shalt Prosper, I want to read every year. It's like good stuff. Some of these other ones, I mean, you kind of get the idea. You're like, okay, I got it. But the stuff like Succeed is definitely worth reminding yourself over and over again. Any other ones, questions, anything like that? All right, cool. Class is over. Thank you guys for coming. All right, agenda for tonight. So begin with the end in mind. That's from Stephen Covey. What we're working toward, I'm going to go over what my assumptions are. So tonight is mostly class with a little bit of exercise workshop thrown in. And so if you do not have a sheet of paper in front of you, you'll want to have a sheet of paper. You'll want to have one clean sheet and a second clean sheet. So if you've been taking notes and writing down books, you will need additional sheets of paper, so feel free to grab those. If you need pens, there's a thing of pens running around here somewhere. Just ask for them, raise your hand or something like that. So begin with the end in mind. We're going to talk about what my assumptions are for tonight, kind of what our goals are for that, and then the psychology behind our exercise. So I'm going to give you a very specific exercise I put together on goal setting, and my exercise is based on a whole bunch of these psychology books and a whole bunch of psychology studies, so I will tell you a lot of why I'm about to do what I'm about to do to you. Okay, so you'll be like, oh, James is going to do this to me. This is going to feel amazing. And then this is the science and technology behind it. So then we're going to go over challenges and dangers. One of them is lack of focus. So maybe we'll do the Rock Johnson thing in there. And then we're actually going to do the exercise, and then I'll take Q&A. Okay, everybody want to play along? Awesome. So Begin with the End in Mind by Stephen Covey. So you know, this study has been around for a little while, but I actually went and I found this article recently. I sent it to Royce. I'm not sure. Maybe I sent it to Brian too. But it's a study that talks about the relationship of money and happiness. How much money do you need to make before you feel happy? And so there's some interesting things that happen. You would think that if I make $25,000 a year, I'm one level of happy. If I make $50,000 a year, I'm another level of happy. If I make $250,000 a year, I'm another level of happy. If I make $2 million, I'm another level of happy. And what tends to happen, though, is, according to science and this kind of study, is that it actually diminishes after a certain point. And the magic number is about 75,000. So once you get above 75,000, your happiness tapers off. You do not get more happy. You don't get a lot more happy over 75K. It really tapers off at 160. So here's what happens. This is your change in happiness. When you make 10K, you make a lot more money. You get a lot more happy until you make 20K. It goes down a little bit. You're more happy, but it's less of a gain at 40K. And then right here at about 75K, that's really when it starts tapering off. The amount of happiness you get by making more than $75,000 a year starts going down significantly. Till by the time you get to 160, it's almost nothing. So once you make over $160,000 a year, the amount of extra happiness you get by making more money is almost non-existent. Kind of interesting, right? Here's another one, though, and it talks about different levels. So the positive effect of additional money, same thing, money down here, and how positive the effect of, you know, at 10K, you're about 70%, And then when you get to 40K, you're up at about 85% till finally you really peak out at 160 at like 88%. The purple line is your life evaluation, how you feel about your life as a whole. That's a different measure. And that also increases to about, I don't know, 90K and really goes up about 160. What's the other one? Not blue, like less depression. Your depression starts off, you're more depressed when you make less money, and it really tapers off at about, I don't know, whatever that is, 85K. So you become much less depressed at about $85,000. And then stress-free, your stress actually goes down until about $75,000 or $80,000, and then you really don't see a significant decrease in stress based on income. Okay? So one of the things I'm going to suggest to you is, as a short-term intermediate goal, is let's try to get you to 75K passive income. Because I think that's the one that's going to be the sweet spot. And then once you achieve that goal, let's move to 160. Okay? Yes. Interesting. So this study talks about per person. Yeah. You could argue that. And that may be the difference between this one at 75 and 160, because they may say it's 160 as a family unit, and the other one was 75 to begin with.
I think the left one is family and the right.
Okay. So it's just the opposite of what I said.
Yeah. So family, basically, the left one is basically saying that 75 or 80K
is
good, right? The right one is saying.
Yep. I thought it was the opposite, but Brian seems to think it's that way. There you go. So that's why he thinks it's that way. Because it says it's that way on the slide. So there you go. Yeah. So no matter what, let's get you to 75, whether it's individual or as a family. Then we can argue about it later. Seem reasonable? Okay. All right, so here's another slide related to this. This shows you how much you need by state in order to hit that 75K benchmark, and it shows you what the numbers are. So for Colorado, it's about $75,300. It adjusts it, apparently, for cost of living. So it is about 75K for people in Colorado. I just want to show you that we're not off because of our state. And this shows you where people are happy in different states. The numbers are for Colorado and where are we? This us? So that's Colorado. So basically, that's the numbers for that. It's about 70 to 75. 75 to 79. Okay, any questions on that? Here's another interesting one. So this shows you how much money you need to make and how satisfied you are. So if you're in that 75 to 100K range, 69% are very satisfied, 27% are somewhat satisfied, 3% are somewhat dissatisfied, and whatever that is, 1% is very dissatisfied. But you can see that it actually goes down over time to the point where if you make more than 500K, apparently 100% of the people are satisfied. So the stats say. All right? How happy are you? So this is a similar type chart. Shows you very happy, fairly happy, not happy. If you're in that 75 to 100 or 50 to 75, 75 to 100 is 60%, 36% are fairly happy, and 4% are not happy. So the odds are if you're making somewhere between 75K and 100K, you are very happy or fairly happy. Okay. Now here's an interesting point. Sean Acor in his book, Happiness Advantage, would suggest that happiness is the cause of this financial stuff. And so you could think to yourself, once I make 75K, I'll be happy. But it's better for you to think to yourself, once I'm happy, I'll be easier to make 75K. Okay? And so that's what this book is about. If you've got a problem being happy, you may want to read Happiness Advantage. I'd put that toward the top of your list. In fact, if that really is your problem, if you've identified, you know, the problem is I'm just not happy. I'm always pissed off. I'm always upset about stuff. I would probably move the Happiness Advantage to the top of the list and skip that and put Succeed second. Okay? Lasting effect. This is an interesting slide. I don't know why I put it up here. Maybe I'll cover it. So basically, it talks about the difference between material purchases and experiential purchases, going to a concert versus buying a new computer or whatever you're doing here. So the pre-purchase forecast, 4.1, and by the way, it's on a scale of 1 to 7. So a 4.41 on the pre-purchase said that the material purchase, that's how much they'd enjoy it. And then the experiential, they thought 2.9, and then it changes. So that 2 weeks after it happened, you're up a little bit on your material purchase, but you're up a lot on your experiential. So you tend to enjoy the experiences you have after the fact. Okay? What tends to happen is, from a goal-setting standpoint, because we talk a lot about goals and doing things, you will tend to look back fondly on all the work you did to acquire your rental properties, but not necessarily always enjoy it while you're doing it. Okay? If you're in school and you had to study really hard, and you put in the effort and you crush stuff and stuff like that, while you're doing it, most people have a love-hate type of relationship with that, or an all-hate. But once you get past it, you look back really fondly as to those were the times when I kicked butt and did all this stuff. Okay? So this is sort of that effect. 4 weeks post-consumption went down a little bit, and this actually went down the tiniest bit. Okay? Any questions on that? Cool. All right, so let's talk a lot about the psychology behind our exercise today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cover Tony Robbins' Dickens process, Maxwell Maltz's Theater of the Mind, Tad James' Secret of Creating Your Future, the timeline therapy stuff, Heidi Halvorsen's Succeed, and then David Allen's Getting Things Done. One of the things I wanted to point out by this is there are several different people that are coming at this problem from different angles, and they're all sort of narrowing in on very similar solutions. There's a lot of overlap between what these guys are doing. Now, a lot of them call it different things. A lot of them describe it very differently. A lot of them tell you how to get there differently, but really they're talking about the same stuff. So it's pretty fascinating to see how all of these different resources are all coming together, and they're coming from different places. You know, the Tony Robbins stuff is, you know, from the 80s and stuff like that, and he was doing this by intuition and reading a bunch of stuff, and the Heidi Halvorsen Grant stuff is almost all psychology studies. She's like at Columbia or NYU or something like that, and she's all into like psychology studies. She's a doctor of psychology, and she does all these studies and kind of compiles them all, okay? All right, so Dickens process. So has anyone taken Personal Power 2 or gone to any Tony Robbins live events? Anyone besides me? Okay, you've gone to live event or did the course?
I did the Edge thing. I had it.
Did the Edge thing?
I didn't do the whole thing.
Okay. Okay, so basically in his old Personal Power 2 course, I think it's Disc 8 if you really want to know, not that I memorized it or anything like that. And also in the live event, he goes through this exercise where he talks about Charles Dickens. Everyone remember Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol? Remember the story with Scrooge? And he's visited by three ghosts. He's visited by the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas future. And the ghost of Christmas past goes in there and shows him how much pain he's caused by being such a schmuck all of his life. Right? I mean, basically, that's what happens, right? The ghost comes in there and says, "You've been a bad boy, Scrooge. And here, look at all this pain that you've caused. And now let's go." Christmas present goes there and he says, "Okay, look at all the crap you've caused to the people that you love, all the people that are suffering because of you, and you know they're having these problems." And then he goes and he shows them the ghost of Christmas future and says, "If you don't change, this is all the crap that's going to happen to you." So Tony Robbins kind of heard the story, and what he realized was this is a really good tool to get someone to change. Because what happens to Scrooge? He wakes up on Christmas morning and realizes, wait, this last one, the ghost of Christmas future, has not actually happened yet, right? This is what will happen if I kind of continue my schmucky ways, but if I change that, there's a possibility it doesn't have to be this nasty. And so Tony Robbins realized this, and so he kind of created this exercise, and he calls it the Dickens pattern or Dickens process, depending on where you see it written or what he's talking about at the time. But he uses that same idea. And so here's basically how it works. He has you identify a belief that you have that you believe is limiting you. I don't have enough money to do deals. I'm not good enough. People don't want to work with me. I can't make phone calls. Whatever it is about you that you have a limiting belief about, just pick whatever one it is. Okay. And then he has you go through this exercise, and he has you in the live version of it. When you go to a seminar, it's really powerful. It's probably one of my favorite parts of the whole seminar. He basically has you go through, and he has you realize all of the crap you had by doing this. So he says, okay, you're unwilling to make seller calls. You know, you're unwilling to go talk to motivated sellers and do deals if that's kind of your thing. You know, if you're unwilling to do that, what is all the stuff that's happened because of that? And he has you go through and say, you know, I'm living in, you know, where I'm living now, which isn't where I want to be, and I don't make enough money, and, you know, my kids are doing drugs and all this other stuff. And one of the most interesting things, the side note that's up here, is it doesn't have to be true. Okay, what you really want to do is you want to leverage as much negative stuff, as much crap and stuff like that you can, and tie it back to whatever it is that you had a limiting belief about. So it doesn't have to be that because you didn't make these calls, you had this major thing happen. And you could basically imagine that it's caused by that, so it doesn't have to be a true thing, which is pretty powerful. Then he has you go and he goes into the future and says, what's going on in your life right now but that's caused all these problems and stuff like that? And then he has you go out into the future and says, okay, if you do not change this limiting belief, if you don't make a change, what will your life look like? What's it going to look like a year from now? Where will you be? What's going on with you? What will it look like 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 30 years from now? And he has you walk through this exercise. It's like probably 90 minutes long, the exercise. Okay? So it's a pretty intense thing. And then he has you come back to today and says something to the effect of, okay, are you ready to make this change? If so, let's go and look at what your future will be like if you go and do it. And he walks you through what the positive future will be like if you decide to change your belief. And then you can do this exercise anytime you want for whatever belief that you want to change. Okay? It's a pretty intense process. So I will tell you some of the examples for me just to kind of give you an idea of how sick I can be probably, and also where I think emotionally you want to bring yourself, right? You don't want to just say, oh, you know, I've had it kind of rough. It's been bad for me, not been fun. So what I did is I actually went and got like crazy leverage on myself. And so for me, because I was whatever it was at the time, I think the first time I went, I was unwilling to make seller calls and go out and sell our presentations. So that was one of the things I was doing, was buying properties off market. And I was like, you know, that's just not fun for me. It's just not my personality. I'm shy. I don't like doing this. And so it was a limiting belief for me because I wasn't willing to go out there and make, you know, calls to motivate sellers and go out there on appointments and buy properties. And so I went and I leveraged myself. And so I said, you know, because I'm unwilling to do this, Tammy and the boys have to eat out of the dumpster at Taco Bell. So you know the Taco Bell in College. If you know this kind of like a drive-thru, there's a dumpster right there. So you visualize, you know, your wife and kids kind of looking around, sneaking behind a little thing, going into the dumpster and taking out really rancid food and having to eat that. Because I'm not willing to make calls. Okay? So you want to leverage yourself to the point where it is crazy extreme. You want to go and just make it really, really painful to do that. Or the other one that I have is, this is probably when my son was, I don't know, 6 years old. Now he's a teenager, and I probably don't feel this way. But basically, you know, at the time, you know, he's a cute little kid and stuff like that. And I imagine to myself, what if Timmy got some type of sickness that if I had been successful financially, I could have just written a check and it would have been solved. But because I've been a schmuck, he's in the hospital, there is a solution, it's just expensive. And if I wasn't willing to do the work, why wasn't I willing to do the work? It's not like I couldn't do it. It's just I chose not to. And so I leveraged, you know, Tammy getting sick in the hospital, not have money to solve it, and really leveraged that against myself, okay? Now, again, I point out they don't need to be true. Imagine the worst possible scenario. Tie it to not achieving your goal or limiting belief, and visual your ideal life, the effort you'll put in, the details, and tie it to achieving your goal. So this takes advantage of promotion and prevention goals, which we're going to cover from Succeed. Does that make sense to people, how this kind of, like, idea of leveraging all the nastiest, worst-case stuff that could possibly happen to you to not doing what you know you're supposed to do, to then seeing how it changes if you do it, how that could be a pretty powerful way to set goals. It's much more of an emotional thing than saying, so, January 1st, what am I going to do this year? I think I'll buy a house. I think I'll do this. Those sound like good goals. Great, let's go celebrate at dinner. Very different process if you go to this extreme and you really put leverage on yourself to achieve it. Okay? So he walks you through like a really light version of this on Personal Power 2 if you go find it on like eBay, I think it's like CD8 or something like that. Or if you go to the live event, he does like a crazy, much better version live. Okay? All right.
Does anybody here or that you're going to talk about tonight talk about how people can identify their limiting beliefs? Because I hear a lot of them both during class and after class.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'm talking about that tonight. I think Tony Robbins does go through it in the Personal Power 2 course because he talks about what limiting beliefs are. And as you recognize them as you go, I mean, this is not a once-and-done exercise. You're constantly going back. And he gives the analogy of, you know, getting your piano tuned. It's not like you tune your piano once and it's done for life. You're really going, yours is not in tune at all.
That's what I was going to say, that it's my limiting beliefs I notice change as my situation
changes. Sure. Yeah.
Like every 3 months, it's like, okay, so now what's my, now what is holding me back?
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree.
The shit changes.
I agree with that. Yeah. So I don't think I'm going to cover that tonight, but there's some stuff there. Yeah, Lewis.
So psychology has like the opposite where they, like, you imagine like your future self.
We're doing that.
Okay.
And so he does that too. He basically has you go, the Ghost of Christmas Future, now that you've made the change, what does it look like? And so he has you do the positive as well as a way to do it. Yeah. So he covers that as well in this particular stuff. All right, so that's the Tony Robbins, Dickens pattern, Dickens process stuff. Now I'm going to move to Maxwell Maltz. This is the Psycho-Cybernetics book, Theater of Your Mind. And the Theater of Your Mind, it's a little bit different. He doesn't have you go through and do all the negative stuff that Tony Robbins does, which I think is probably one of the missing pieces to a lot of other goal setting, is you need to become emotionally involved in your goals, not just, you know, rationally, these are what my goals are, let me go work on achieving them. You need to become emotional about it. Because your emotions are much stronger than your kind of like logical, rational self. So the Theater of Your Mind, though, basically it has you go and sit down in a quiet spot, close your eyes, and imagine yourself going through the steps to achieve your goal. Not just the I'm slaying the dragon at the end or, you know, I'm buying 10 properties, but the steps you're doing it and visualizing yourself looking at houses and, you know, running numbers with the spreadsheet and analyzing deals and deciding this is a good deal and, you know, coming up with the down payment or finding partners and writing offers and going to closing and all the steps. And the more detail you can imagine, the better off you are. Okay? And so he goes through and he has you do this. Details matter, the more the better. And you get better at this over time. So there's a lot of people, and one of the reasons why this is frustrating for a lot of folks is they don't believe they can visualize. They don't believe they have the power to do it. They don't have the patience to sit down and go through, you know, a movie. Is it worth taking 60 minutes to kind of visualize all the stuff that you need to do in your life to figure stuff out in order to, you know, have a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio and have $75,000 a year in passive income? I would think so, but some people just aren't willing to do that, okay? So details matter. You get better at this over time. And expectations matter. This is pretty interesting, too. How many people know the story of Roger Bannister? Yeah, so Roger Bannister was the first person that ran a sub 4-minute mile. Before Roger Bannister did it, the sporting community as a whole thought that it was physically impossible for a human to run that fast. It could not be done. They could not maintain that speed for that distance. And so they thought that for the longest time, no one could get below 4 minutes. Roger Bannister had a different belief. He expected that he could do it. He knew he could run a quarter of a mile in under a minute. And so he thought to himself, I'm going to train myself to run 4 consecutive 1-minute quarter miles. And so he practiced that way. He would get 4 different people to pace him that all ran sub 1-minute quarter miles, which people were doing. Okay, so he basically got 4 different people to pace him to do that, and then he would do a quarter mile with one person who was running sub 1 minute, got another person to run the next quarter mile with him sub 1 minute, and continue and do that. Once Roger Bannister did the sub 4-minute mile, a whole bunch of people did it right after him. So once they proved that you could do it, and your expectations about what was possible, it wasn't long after that some kids in high school were running sub 4-minute miles. So it wasn't like this fluke thing. Okay, so your expectations matter. What you believe about what can be done matters. And we're going to talk about the community and seeing other people around you achieving the goals you want to achieve and how important that is to keep coming to class and keep networking with people that are doing the goals you want to do. All right, timeline therapy. So you determine where your timeline is. For me, mine's up and to the right. My that's my future. My back is over here to the left. And by the way, they don't always have to be in a line. And some people have them going up and down. Some people have them going left and right. But that's where mine are. And then you can go back into the past of time and replace memories that are hindering your progress. So Tony Robbins does an exercise like this. There's a whole group of people that do timeline therapy. I think they're like psychologists that actually use this as a means of overcoming trauma and emotional trauma and stuff like that. You can also use it, and not as many psychologists do this, you can also use it to go out into your future and set future memories which draw you to your goals. Okay? Basically, it's another version of theater of your mind. It's a different way of looking at it because you're looking at what you're trying to do in the future, what has happened in the past, and you're kind of moving along the spectrum. So create detailed process maps of what you need to do to achieve your goals, visualizing yourself doing those steps, and creating future memories of you doing those. Okay? Tony Robbins also does Next Size Live events. Talk about that. Okay. Now there's like, I don't know, 6 slides on Succeed because Succeed is pretty profound as far as goal setting goes. How am I doing on time? Okay, good. All right, so, and this is all over the place. This is not like a order. I just wanted to get you the information, so I apologize if some of it comes before others and stuff like that. So there's 2 different ways to think about the task of vacuuming. And it turns out the way that you think about the task has a pretty profound impact on you. And this is, there's a lot of psychology experiments where the psychologists sort of prime their victims, for lack of a better word, that they're going to do an experiment on by setting them up in a weird way. So they'll go and they'll, they want to find out if reading, if like the priming effect that they have, what they're doing beforehand, affects what people say about a certain passage they're reading. So what they do is they go out to people on the street, they have them read a passage, they have them hold someone else's coffee, whether it's an iced coffee or a hot coffee is the variable. So they will give somebody a cold coffee and have them hold it. Say, they'll go up to a stranger, I'm sorry, I need to get something out of pocket. Can you hold this for a second? And they hand it to them. They let them hold on to it for like 15 seconds and they give it back. Then they have everyone read the same passage, same written thing. And the passage describes like a character doing something, like a paragraph long. And then they ask them, can you please describe this character? The people that had cold coffee described the character as cold. The people that had the warm coffee describe the character as warm. So the things that impact, that are around you making decisions, have a huge impact. How you kind of put things in your mind have an impact as well. So vacuuming. You could describe vacuuming as, I am sucking up crumbs, the physical act of what you're doing. Or you could describe it as keeping things clean, sort of the why you're doing it. Okay. So how you look at the task, especially with real estate stuff, determines how you think about it. Now, the what, the literal description, the sucking up crumbs, is better for unfamiliar, complex, long time to learn tasks and goals. So if you're thinking to yourself, okay, I want to acquire a rental property in the next 3 months, I want to do a nomad property in the next 3 months, it is better for you to think of your tasks in the what sense, not in the why sense. You don't want to think of it in, I want to get passive income. What you want to think of it as is, okay, I need to email James and ask him to send me a list of properties. I need to go look at properties. I need to write offers. I need to go under contract. I need to write a contract, get it accepted. I need to do a 10 closing. Those are the steps, the what stuff, okay? Also, for more immediate tasks, tomorrow tasks versus next month to determine if it's feasible or not. So another advantage of talking about what stuff, like sucking up crumbs, we tend to describe tasks that are happening tomorrow or very soon in terms of what. We tend to determine tasks that are going to happen in a while out for feasibility and for enjoyment. Am I going to like doing this? So you might describe, I'm going to clean the house next month. Versus, if you're going to do it tomorrow, you tend to say, I'm going to suck up all the dirt on the ground or the crumbs. It also helps to prevent procrastination. When you say, I'm going to clean the house, it actually makes you more likely to procrastinate than saying, I'm going to suck up crumbs with the vacuum. You're more likely to do the task if it's described as a what. We tend to favor why once it becomes familiar and easy. So Brian doesn't think of buying another rental property as going out to see properties with James and writing offers and doing that. He thinks it as, I'm adding more freedom to myself and getting more passive income. He thinks of it in more in terms of why. Because it's familiar and easy for him. He's used to it. And so you transition to that because this becomes cumbersome once you've done it a few times. It's easier just to say, I'm motivated because I know what the end is. I've seen it so many times. I'm used to it. I would rather do the why description. Make sense? Okay. We tend to favor why once it becomes familiar and easy for more far-off tasks to determine if it will be enjoyable or not. So will I want to clean the house next month? It's better to describe it that way. Use triggers to keep yourself motivated, fill your environment with reminders, and keep your unconscious mind working towards your goal, even when distracted. So the more triggers you have around you, the better off you are. Coming to NCREG, receiving emails, reading real estate-related stuff, watching motivated, especially real estate-related videos, things like that that trigger you and keep your mind on task, they're helpful. You should do those. Okay. Another one is cash. So if you're wanting to acquire more cash, it might behoove you to actually have cash in your wallet. Because every time you open your wallet, you're going to see physical cash, and you're going to be reminded that's what you're working toward. There's another weird psychology principle about, abundance, and that is being able to visualize, okay, I have this money, I could buy this and this and this and this and this and this and this. Not that you are going to do that, but it makes you realize that it's a more abundant world and that you have the choice to buy that and that you're choosing not to. All right, some more stuff from Succeed. So they recommend setting detailed if-then plans. If I'm going to go to a friend's house, I am not going to have fried food if you're on a diet. You know, if I receive a property in my email, I'm going to analyze it. And if the analysis says that it's you know, 1% cash on cash return in our market, then I'm going to go see it. Okay? Set yourself if-then plans in place so that you know what to do. You know how to operate. You want to think about this stuff in advance, both for the goal itself and how to overcome obstacles. So one of the things is if you know, and historically, I've had a hard time being motivated and doing the things I know I'm supposed to do, think about ways to overcome those obstacles. What can I do if I'm not motivated? What can I do if I find myself not analyzing the deals? And think about if-then plans to overcome those. Think about past achievements to gain confidence and optimism. So it helps, like just like with the cold coffee cup or the warm coffee cup, it helps if you are in the frame of mind where you're thinking about scenarios in the past where you have achieved something or where you stuck it out when things were hard and you put in effort and you wanted to quit and you didn't quit and you continued and you put in the effort and you accomplished something and it was worthwhile at the end. Being in that mindset, thinking about those tasks before you go do something else that's going to be hard for you has a huge impact on whether or not you'll continue on and do the stuff you're supposed to do. Okay? Don't visualize success. Instead, visualize the steps you will take in order to succeed. So part of you needs to be motivated, because there's two components. Part of you needs to be motivated by, I want passive income. I want $75,000 in passive income. But really, visualizing, I'm rolling around in the money, I'm on the bed, I throw up the $20,000 in cash, and we're kind of just doing it, and I got to take a shower because money's all dirty. No, but if you're doing all that stuff, that's not what you need to overly visualize over and over again. What you really need to visualize is all the stuff you need to do in order to get there. Looking at houses, reading emails of properties, finding down payment money, closing on deals, putting tenants in there, filling out the lease. Visualize all that stuff and realize it takes effort, it's hard, you need to put in the work. Because that's important too. Choices you'll make, strategies you'll use to overcome challenges. So visualize all those. I have a choice between watching, what's the new hot show? Naked and Afraid? Dating Naked? Game of Thrones. Am I going to watch Game of Thrones or am I going to analyze properties? Well, if I analyze my properties, I will reward myself by allowing myself to watch Game of Thrones. If there's anything in here that's good, I'm going to email James and say, I want to go see that property tomorrow. Get me in. Now I'm going to go watch Game of Thrones and reward myself. Think about the obstacles, because you don't want to go watch Game of Thrones and be like, oh, I'm so tired now. I don't want to go and look at properties. Okay? So think about it in advance. It helps a lot to imagine it will be hard, but you are up for the challenge. Plan more, put in more effort, take more action in pursuit of goals. So when you realize I'm going to need to put in effort, it's going to be hard, I'm going to need to stay up late, I'm going to need to analyze properties, I'm going to look at properties that are crappy and I'm not going to buy, I'm going to look at properties that are amazing, I'm going to need to make hard decisions and pull the trigger and make offers accepted and get financing and kind of close on the deals and then put tenants in there. If you realize it takes all those steps and it's hard to do, that's better. You're much more likely to put in the effort, push hard, and succeed. If you just think, this is so easy. You know, Brian stands up here and he said, oh, I bought 6 properties last week. It's super easy. Anyone could do this. No, that's a huge mistake. Maybe okay for Brian because it's easy for him now. He's done it so many times. Not for you. You guys need to think it's going to be hard and you're willing to put in the effort and that you're going to push hard and do it and stick with it and have grit and focus. Okay? All right. So there's two different types of goals. There's be good goals and then there's getting better goals. Be good goals is I'm smart. Okay? And so I have this identity that I'm smart. That's one type of goal. Another one is I constantly study so that I'm constantly improving my intelligence, or I'm constantly reading books. That's a different type of goal. So proving yourself, be good goals, they are good for really easy things. You know, if they help you perform at a high level for easy things, the challenge with be good goals is that when the going gets tough, you tend to give up because it hurts your identity to think, I thought I was smart. I guess I'm not, because I'm not succeeding, so I should give up. Whereas the get better goals say, I read books. Okay, well, this book was hard. I mean, that's why I'm reading. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to make improvement. Okay. The danger of feeling you aren't good enough and giving up and gets too difficult, for example, skipping NCRED classes because you think you know it already. Do you think Brian could have taught most of this class? Do you think Brian could teach all of the other real estate investing classes that we have here? Does Brian come to those classes? Why? Why do you come to a class on cash flow, Brian, when we teach how to analyze a deal in your spreadsheet? You wrote the spreadsheet, right? Because he's getting better. He does a lot of this naturally, by the way. I don't know if he does takes a lot of time to think about it, but he is definitely a getting better type of guy, mostly. Constant improvement. All right. So don't skip NCRED classes, even if you think you know what's going on. That's a mistake. Huge mistake. Improving yourself, getting better goals. It's the best resiliency, grit, stick with it because your goal is to improve yourself from wherever you happen to be. No matter where you are, you want to get better. And so it's easier to stick it out and say, wow, this is why I need to stick it out because I'm not where I need to be. I want to push harder. I want to get better. I want to constantly improve. Brian, at least when I was talking to him about weightlifting, was constantly talking about PRs, personal records, doing better, getting better like that. That's really good natural goal setting stuff. Get better tends to be more enjoyable, better planning, and better processing of information. So when you set getting better goals, it tends to be more enjoyable. You can plan easier. You can better process the information you've got coming in. Coming to NCRED classes to keep better, get better, getting better and improve. It also fights depression and anxiety. If you have a goal to get better, you're less likely to get depressed. You are more likely to be less anxious because you know, I need to do this. I need to just put in time and work at it. Practice. When in doubt, try to set getting better goals over be good goals, and checklists are examples of getting better goals because we can improve on them. You can go through and say, okay, analyze the property. That's my part of my checklist. What's my checklist for analyzing the property? If you notice I can improve these areas, you can actually improve your written checklist to do it better and better each time. If you buy a house one time and you have a checklist for going through, you're like, okay, if I do this again, I didn't realize I need to get a sewer scope because there's a possibility sewer scope in there. I'm going to go add that to my checklist. Now I'm better at buying houses. Okay? I think that's the getting better part of it, because if you have the be good goal of I'm a great businessman, I'm a great salesperson, or whatever it is, and you have a thing where it slips up and you don't do well, you can easily become depressed and anxious and I suck at this, I should give up. Where if you're just like, hey, listen, I want to constantly do better. What did I do that was good this time? How can I improve on it? What did I do that was bad? How can I improve on that? It makes it much easier for you to go through and improve. Yeah, so it's really important stuff, especially for entrepreneurs. All right. Promotion versus prevention. If you remember, we talked about this with Tony Robbins stuff. So promotion is achievement or accomplishment and used for maximizing gain. So your end goal is 10 free and clear properties with cash flow of X. That's what you're working toward, kind of like your why in a lot of ways. Okay? Promotion goals work better with optimism than prevention. You get all excited. You come here, you realize I can have $8 million in free and clear real estate. I can have $100,000 in cash flow from my free and clear properties. That's awesome. I want to work through that. I get excited. I come out of NCRED, I'm all pumped up. I'm ready to go. Okay? That's good to a point. It gives you a rush and joy when we succeed, but it also makes you sad and depressed when we fail. So you come here, you get all excited, and then you don't take action that first week. You don't take action that next week, and you don't want to come back to NCRED because you think that you suck and there's something wrong with you and you can't succeed at it, which is absolutely not true. Okay? There's a risk bias. So you tend to want to take on additional risk when you're thinking about promotion goals, and you hate to miss an opportunity. You think, if I don't buy this one now, I'm going to miss out. Prevention goals is more about safety and danger, avoiding losses. So if you actually frame acquiring 10 free and clear rental properties and having passive income as, I need to have a solution if I lose my job, or I don't want to eat, I haven't saved for retirement, and my current job is not going to give me enough, I need to do something about that, and you have those types of feelings about it, to seek safety, avoid danger, and avoid loss. You know, the goal I set about Timmy being in the hospital, that's avoiding loss. Having Tammy and JC and Timmy eating out of a dumpster, that's avoiding loss. Those are good things to do for prevention type goals. Optimism and confidence with prevention goals reduces motivation. So if you think to yourself, I'm optimistic of saving for retirement, catching up for retirement, that actually is an anti-helper for your goals. It goes against it. It's not good. It dampens vigilance on prevention goals. So with prevention goals, you tend to put in a lot of effort and you need to focus on getting stuff done. and put in the effort and really work towards stuff. And when you're optimistic about things, you're like, you know, that's not going to happen. I don't have to do that. Better to focus on what you can lose if you fail with these, those types of goals. It gives you calm, relax, and relieve. It makes you calm, relax, and relieve if we succeed with those goals. So if you manage to solve the problem of, I now have cash flow, I can lose my job and it's going to be okay, or I have enough for retirement, that relieves you. It doesn't make you all rush, joy, and excited when you succeed. Okay? And when you actually fail, it makes you more anxious and nervous, which actually motivates you to do more. Those are the types of goals you want. It loves caution. The fear of making a mistake makes you better planner and avoids procrastination because you're motivated to do it. You have a fear that this is going to hurt. It's going to suck. You know, Tony Robbins talks about, we will do more to avoid losing $10,000 than we will to gain $10,000. That's what this is about. Because the loss, the feeling of loss of losing $10,000 or having to eat cat food because you can't afford food in retirement, stuff like that, much better with these prevention goals of why it's going to motivate you to go out there and do the work you need to do in order to get your rental properties or do Nomad. Detail-oriented, accuracy over speed, better performance in face of distractions and temptations, and you don't let things slip through the crack as much with prevention-type goals. Okay? So when in doubt, probably prevention goals most of the time. Those are the better ones for you to set. Now, sometimes in order to get jumpstart the whole goal-setting process, you need promotion. You need to say, I'm going to have $8 million in free and clear real estate. I'm going to have $100,000, $120,000 a year in cash flow. I have all this freedom. I can do whatever I want. Great. Now, think about it as a prevention goal. Change the way you look at it, the hot coffee, soft coffee. Change your perspective, how you're framing it, and start working toward this so that you take the action you need to do. Okay? All right, best goals that bring lasting happiness and well-being satisfy three human needs. So if you're going to set goals, ideally you want to set ones that hit all three of these. Relatedness, your ability to kind of feel community. And Craig and other real estate investors, do you feel connected to them and you're doing things so that you can be part of the group and you're not an outcast because you haven't actually gone out and looked at houses? Better for have a goal that actually makes you more related. Contributing to the community and charity. If your goal is your ability to go out there and say, okay, I want to make this money so that I can contribute to the Humane Society or something else where I want to give back to the community, that's motivating. That's good. That's a good relatedness goal. Competence, where it develops new skills, has you constantly getting better, shows you can do it and demonstrating mastery, so you get better at stuff. That's another good goal. They should hit all three of these. And then autonomy, you get to choose it. I'm not going to dictate what goal is for you. You want to be able to choose whatever goal is right for you and do it and move toward it. And then follow your passions. So avoid goals like popularity, fame, and wealth for its own sake. Those are not good goals to set. Okay? Which I should tell my son because he thinks he's going to be a famous rapper. So you really don't want to have a goal of being famous. It's not a good goal. You can set the goal and have that be a byproduct, just like with wealth. Actually, it's a good tie-in. Thanks, Brian. So wealth for its own sake is not good, but seeking wealth as a means to an end is okay. So seeking fame is probably as a means to an end is okay. So basically, if you need wealth because you need to be able to give to the charity, that's fine. But if you just want wealth for the sake of wealth, it's not going to be good for you. You're going to feel unfulfilled at the end. Providing for your family, even if you lose or give up your job, giving to charity, etc., those are all okay examples of why you'd want to do wealth. But just to say, I've got $1 million, not enough. Okay. All right, so choose your own goal. We talked about that. Commit publicly. So there's some compelling reasons that if you commit publicly to your goal, it's actually going to be better for you. Framing the goal with a story changes how we look at it. So we're looking to see how much you can improve. If they do these psychology experiments. They're like experiment on people. But they go and they'll tell them, okay, here's the test we're going to have you do. We're trying to see if you're going to get better and improve. The person actually will perform longer and do different things if you tell them that up front versus telling them we're trying to see how good you are or how smart you are. They perform differently if that's the case. So be aware when you're setting your goals and frame it appropriately. Goals are highly contagious. So if you see other people talking about their goals and achieving their goals, you tend to be more motivated to achieve and set those similar goals. And it doesn't even have to be similar, but it tends to be easier if they're similar. Seeing someone achieve and set goals, even if it's not that exact goal, you see other people as an example achieving things, it's better for you. So attend then, Craig. You're the average, where's Royce?
I know, he's outside.
You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, so consider moving closer to people that will raise you up. So if you hang out with people that are going after their goals, they're making offers, they're they've got passive income from their properties, they make money like from a job or things like that, you tend to be the average of the five people you hang out with most. So hang out with people that are better than you.
Take a look at those five people and think about replacing the ones that are not
great. Agreed. I agree. Yep.
It's not a joke. It's serious.
That's true.
If you look at that and you
be deliberate.
Person, yeah,
you can love the person you're getting rid of.
Yeah, you're not like, hey, you're not my friend anymore. Just, I'm going to hang around maybe a little less.
That's right.
More with somebody else.
That's right. Yep. Okay. Focus on execution. So don't focus on the end. Focus on what you need to do in order to get there, the execution part of it. Know what to do. We're going to talk a lot about that later tonight. Protect yourself from distractions and competing goals. So it's really hard to have seven different goals you're trying to achieve at the same time. We're going to talk about willpower in a little bit, but it's really hard to do that. Check your progress frequently. Get feedback. Say, I was supposed to have accomplished this. I didn't do it. What's going on? I need to catch up. Decide when and where you'll execute your goal. We're going to talk about that with the exercise. Blame effort, not ability. You are smart enough to do this. You have all the resources you need to do this. It is not any of that. It's you're not putting in the effort. And if you're not putting in the effort, it's all you. Because you have everything you need. Brian solved all your problems in 2016. He solved most of your problems in 2017 again, in case you missed it. You could buy houses with nothing down. We've talked about how to partner if you don't have the credit to do it. These are solvable solutions. These are solvable problems. It's your effort. You're not doing what you need to do. So blame effort, not ability. You're not working hard enough.
Which, by the way, is probably one of Dave and I's largest frustration when we talk about why people aren't being successful. And it's really hard for him or I to like make other people take action. Right? It's only you're the only person that can take that action to make yourself successful. Right? Somebody can tell you exactly what to do and lay it all out, and if you don't actually do your work, it's not gonna come true for you.
Thank you. What's that? Yeah. And you know, for clients, one of the things I do in my business as a real estate broker is I look at the whole process for buying. And I say, what can I actually do for clients so that I can eliminate that friction and say, you don't even need to worry about that. I'll take care of it. Just you keep moving on your stuff. And so we look for opportunities to say, take that off your plate and do it. Avoid comparisons to others. Me comparing myself to Brian is very dangerous. Right? It's not a good thing for either of us. Compare your past performance to your current performance. How did I do and how am I doing now? And improve. Self-control. Willpower is a muscle. So if you are trying to prevent yourself from you know, eating crappy food or you're trying to make yourself do deal analysis every night, it is a muscle. Your self-control, if you're trying to do a diet and also look at deals at the same time, it's really hard. You get weak. Your muscle gets burned out, gets fatigued. So it gets tired when used, it needs rest to recover. It's the highest risk of temptation. When you are tired, when you actually had to go to a party and avoid eating chocolate or cake or ice cream or something like that, and then you come home and you're supposed to actually work on doing your deal analysis, your willpower is weaker from having to make those choices at the party, and it's going to have a harder time. You're going to be more tempted to just skip doing the deal analysis when you come home. Okay? You can strengthen it with use. Use high-weight reps, so intentionally put yourself under stress to try to make your willpower stronger. They use examples in the book of reminding yourself to sit up straight when you sit down, or you know, keep your hands out of your pocket, or something that's hard for you, to make sure you practice it to get stronger. You can get a boost by thinking about someone who has it or see someone exercising it. So hanging out with other people that have willpower can actually help you. Be careful, though, of being empathetic. So if Brian is actually being really good and resistant eating crap when we go out to eat after this, and I'm watching him and I'm feeling empathetic toward Brian, that actually uses my willpower. So I should not do that. But watching him restrain himself actually is good for me. Good moods and sugar, glucose in the bloodstream, boost self-control. So if you're in a good mood, it actually makes it easier for you to avoid temptation and do that. And actually, they do tests where they give people, they did a whole bunch of science experiments where they give people Kool-Aid with real sugar, and when their sugar level goes up, they're able to show more self-control than when they don't. It takes about 10 minutes for it to happen. It's easier to stop before you start, so it's harder for you to say, I'm only going to eat X number of things. It's better for you not to eat them at all. Focus on one challenge at a time. All right, now we're going to talk about Getting Things Done by David Allen. That was pretty much Succeed. There's a bunch of other stuff in it, but those are some of the highlights, especially related to tonight. So this is the process for David Allen's Getting Things Done. It's a book about productivity and kind of keeping track of everything that's in your head and your to-do list. And so one of the things that he talks about doing is your capture list. So when you're sitting down and you're about to do Getting Things Done as a methodology, you actually list out everything in your mind that's on your mind. Okay, I need to go pick up milk on the way home, or I need to wash the car, or I need to do laundry, or I need to go analyze deals, or you know, I need to go give to charity, I need to do my taxes, I need to replace my roof 2 years from now, I need to do whatever it is. You make this whole list of stuff that you're supposed to do. Okay, that's what he tells you to do. And part of this, part of what I'm going to show you tonight, the exercise, is based on this idea of writing down everything you need to do and then getting it organized so that you know what your next actions are. Because what he has you do, as soon as you write them down, you decide, okay, not that I'm going to do this next, but if I wanted to move whatever this task is, moving taxes forward, what is my very next action, the physical thing I need to see myself doing in order to move doing taxes along? Well, I don't have my W-2, so I need to go ahead and email my employer and ask them for my W-2. Let me go ahead and put that down as my next action to getting my taxes done. You write that down. Okay, so that's getting things done. There's a lot more to it, but here's the relevant takeaway for this class. Capture everything, which is a capture process. Write down everything that's on your mind. Get it on paper. Determine your next action, what you physically need to do next, and then group multi-step items into projects. So if you have a, you know, get taxes done, there may be 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 steps that need to happen in that. That's a project, even if it seems really small. All right, so let's talk about some challenges and danger. So here are the challenges I think that are related to goal setting for tonight. Number one, lack of focus, what I call the shiny object syndrome. I got a really good friend of mine who is constantly distracted by something else, right? He's got a very successful business, but he's constantly like, oh, look at this new business I could start, or this new thing I could do, and he's constantly distracted, where if he just focused on his own business, you know, he'd do much better. In fact, as I was saying it, I was thinking about myself. I probably suffer from this too. So I really should just focus in on my real estate brokerage business and not worry about any of this other stuff that I occasionally go off on these sidetracks on, right? But it's this this idea that, you know, you come here and you get all excited, you get all worked up, and then you're out tomorrow night and you go to an MLM meeting and you're like, oh, I'm going to go sell diet pills because I can make $1 million in 3 months selling diet pills. Or, oh my gosh, now I'm going to go do, what's the new MLM phase? What's going on out there? What are they? Who knows? Essential oils. You're going out there and doing essential oils, or you're starting a prepaid legal business or whatever it is. You get all excited about that and you lose your distraction. If you would just, instead of doing serial different 9 different things to do, if you just actually focused on real estate, you'd be done. It's over. You'd be finished. Just go ahead and do it. Okay? Procrastination, we're talking about that, and lack of follow-through. All right, so here's a Zig Ziglar video about priming the pump.
Zig Ziglar. Inspiring true performance.
Uh-oh.
Because I believe this is a story of life. I believe it's your story. I believe it's the story of America. I believe it's the story of success. I got a couple of good friends who many, many years ago were riding around in the South Alabama foothills. It was a hot August day, and they got thirsty. Bernard Haygood was driving. Jimmy Glenn was the passenger. They pulled behind this old abandoned farmhouse, and Bernard hopped out. He ran over, and there was an old pump on the well, and he grabbed the handle and he started the pump. How many of you have ever used one of these old-fashioned water pumps? Can I see your hand, please? Okay, well, he had just a pumping away, you know it. After about 3 or 4 minutes, he said, Jimmy, better get that old bucket over there and dip some water out of the creek. We're going to have to prime the pump. How many of you know what I'm talking about when I say you got to prime the pump? Well, for you underprivileged non-pumpers, that just means you got to put something in here before you get something out there. See, unfortunately, a lot of people stand in front of the stove of life and they say, now, stove, you give me some heat, then I'll put some wood in you. That ain't the way it works. You got to put something in before you can get anything out. So many times, you know, the employee goes to the employer and says, give me a raise, then I'll start coming to work on time. Or so many times they will come to him and say, make me the boss. Now, I know I haven't been here very long, don't really deserve to be the boss, but I just function better when I am in charge of the thing. You reward me now, and then I promise you, I'll learn what this business is all about later on. Reward me now, and I'll produce later. It doesn't work that way. Can't you just see a youngster in school saying, teacher, if I take a failing grade home, my parents are going to skin me alive. Pass me on this quarter, and next time, I'll study more than anybody else. Reward me now, I'll produce later. It doesn't work that way. Can't you just see an old farmer standing out in the fields in October and saying, Lord, I know I didn't plant a thing this year, but if you give me a big crop this year, I'll plant more than anybody next year. It ain't that way, folks. You got to put something in before you can expect to get anything out. Well, he's just pumping away. You know, that's hot. It's August. I mean, the question is just how much pumping are you going to do for a drink of water? And finally, old Bernard said, you know, Jimmy, I don't believe it's any water down there. Jimmy said, yeah, it is, Bernard. You know, in South Alabama, the wells are deep. And, oh, we're glad they're deep because the deeper the well, the cooler, the cleaner, the sweeter, the purer, the better tasting the water. And isn't that true of life? Isn't it true that if you could become an MD by 6 weeks of summer school, that the rewards would be almost minimal or nothing? And how many patients would you have? Isn't it true that if you become a sales expert in 3 days of a training school, that the rate of pay would go down rather radically? Isn't it true that anything worth doing is worth doing poorly until you can learn to do it well? We'll never know how many kids have missed a college scholarship because they didn't study an average of 10 more minutes a day. We will never know how we come so close to promotion, but we grew discouraged and quit too soon. We'll never know how much more success we would have had we just had a little more pumping in there and pump and pump and pump and pump. Well, finally, old Bernard just got disgusted. He threw up his hand. He said, Jimmy, there's just no water down there. Jimmy said, don't stop, Bernard. Don't stop. If you stop, the water's going to go all the way back down, and then you're going to have to start all over. The reality is, folks, and I'm totally convinced of this, this is the story of America. This is your story. This is the story of success. This is the story of life. I believe with all of my heart that if you would pump long enough and hard enough and enthusiastically enough, that eventually the reward is going to follow the effort. And then once that water starts to flow, all you got to do is just keep a little easy, steady pressure on it, and you're going to get more water than you can possibly use. The basic problem is this. So many times people get involved in something and they'll say, well, I'll give it a try, and if it works out, that'll be good, and if it doesn't work out, I mean, hey, I ain't gonna kill myself. You know what I mean, fella? Well, I gotta tell you something, folks. You're gonna pump forever like that before anything happens. When you get into something, grab that sucker and get with it. And then once the water starts to flow, then, ladies and gentlemen, that's what Strategies for Success is all about.
Ziegler. Inspiring true performance.
Ziegler. All right. So that's about priming the pump. Oops. So focus. So this is Brian's favorite quote. At the beginning, you need to pump like crazy. It might seem like a lot of work for little or no reward. That's normal. Right? You're going to go and do a ton of effort. You're going to come to class for a long time. You're going to look at a lot of properties. You're going to make a lot of offers. You're going to close on one property, and you're going to acquire one property. You're going to be like, huh, I barely have any cash flow at all. Why am I going through all this effort? You got to keep pushing. You got to keep doing it until you finally get the rewards. It's normal. Stick with it. It's worth it. Remember Nomad numbers. 10 free and clear houses is inflation-adjusted $3 million in real estate. So $3 million in today's real estate is about what you do with Nomad. And inflation-adjusted $12,000 per month in cash flow. That's what the numbers say for Nomad. You'll probably need to prime the pump with time and money. Be willing to put in the effort. Don't run from pump to pump and not stick around until the water is flowing easily with steady pumping. So the risk is you come here and you get all excited, and then you go home and someone takes you to a Tupperware party or whatever the equivalent is, and you're like, you know, I'm actually going to go do this other side business because the side business looks easier, right? When you go and you start digging deep into stuff, you realize this is work. I got to go do stuff and put effort in. And so it's work. And so when you first heard about real estate, you're like, wow, this is so easy. You buy a house, you get positive cash flow. This is super easy to do, right? I mean, I'm just going to go acquire 10 of them and I'm done. And then you get in here and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a lot to know about this stuff. It takes effort. You got to put in work and do it. That's good. So you're going to go and someone's going to tell you, you know, if you go sell essential oils, you'll make $100,000 at the end of year 2. All you got to do is talk to 3 friends. And they're going to talk to 3 friends. And they're going to talk to 3 friends. And you're going to be rich. Right? Don't do it. Don't fall for it. Don't go pump the pump and start pumping on that thing and saying, okay, let's see if this one works. Oh, let's see if this one works. If you just stayed on the one pump and you pump like crazy for a little while, eventually it's like, just happens. It's easy. All right. Procrastination. You got to know what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and then use the what descriptions of tasks instead of why. Remember that goal setting thing? Not the why versions. You want to do the what. Sucking up crumbs versus keeping things clean. Use prevention goals instead of promotion goals, safety and danger, avoiding losses, not being on welfare, or having money if you get sick or lose your job, and then use the Dickens process on yourself in order to achieve your goal. All right, I'm going to read this to you. It's about the lonely ember and the importance of coming to Anchorage and be part of the community. A member of a certain church who previously had been attending services regularly stopped going. After a few weeks, the pastor decided to visit him. It was a chilly evening. The pastor found the man at home alone, sitting before a blazing fire. Guessing the reason for his pastor's visit, the man welcomed him in, led him to a big chair near the fireplace, and waited. The pastor made himself comfortable but said nothing. In the grave silence, he contemplated the play of the flames around the burning logs. After some minutes, the pastor took the fire tongs, carefully picked up a brightly burning ember, and placed it to the one side of the hearth all alone. Then he sat back in his chair, still silent. The host watched all this in quiet fascination. As the one lone ember's flame diminished, there was a momentary glow, and then its fire was no more. Soon it was cold and dead as a doornail. Not a word had been spoken since the initial greeting. Just before the pastor was ready to leave, he picked up the cold, dead ember and placed it back in the middle of the fire. Immediately, it began to glow once more with the light and warmth of the burning clothes around it. As the pastor reached the door to leave, his host said, "Thank you so much for your visit, and especially for the fiery sermon. I shall see you back in church next Sunday. The idea is, when you guys come here, most of the time, I'd say, you know, 9 times out of 10, you leave all fired up and ready to go. But if you skip for like 2 or 3 weeks, you get cold. You just don't have the motivation to do stuff. You want to be around the 5 people that you hang out with most that are going to be the average that bring you up, that come here and learn stuff and work and put in effort. Be accountable. You got to come to NCREG. Or it doesn't have to be here. Go to any investor club meeting you want, okay? But go to somewhere to get kind of that community and grow. All right, lack of follow through. You need detailed if-then plans. Plan on yourself not doing things and figure out how you can make yourself overcome those. Anticipate what your challenges are going to be. When you'll do stuff, what you'll do, and why you'll do it. There's a neuro-linguistic programming presupposition that says there is no failure, only feedback. You want to be setting getting better goals. You're not going to fail. You're going to find out that making 70 cents on the dollar offers don't work. That's not failing. That's realizing that's not realistic in our marketplace. Okay? So you got to go adjust your goals and keep getting better, improve. You know, there's a great story about Thomas Edison creating the incandescent light bulb. Just tried a whole bunch of things until he figured out which one worked and which one didn't. Baby's walking. So how long do you give a baby to figure out how to walk? They don't start walking at 6 months. You say, okay, I guess we failed. We're not doing this anymore. They're done. Brian says, yes. Okay? You basically stick with it until it happens. You want to stick with this until it happens. Try something to see if that works. Try something else. Keep going. And then we remember that the expectations matter with the Roger Bannister story. All right, so let's do our exercise. So the idea behind the exercise is you want to go and acquire $75,000 in passive income. That's the end goal. In order to do the end goal, actually, we decided it's going to be 10 free and clear houses, but it's 75K is for you for tonight, okay? In order to reach that end goal, in order to get to 75K at some point, don't you agree that at some point you're going to need to buy at least one house? Yes. So it's like this step that you need to get to there. It's like you're looking forward, you're like, okay, that's where I want to go. What things am I going to need to do between now and then? Well, at some point you're going to need to buy a house. Maybe a lot more, but at least one. You're going to need to close on that house. You're going to need to write an offer. And you're probably going to go need to look at the houses before you do it. And so the idea is once you know what you're trying to do, think about all the different steps that are between there in order to figure out what you need to do, the what stuff, okay? So the future narrative process, it's the importance of telling your own story in advance, okay? Gives you a formal process for determining what your future goals are, then to list out all the activities that you need to do to achieve those goals, and then to schedule those goals as activities on your calendar. You decide the what goals, you set them all, you figure out everything you're gonna need to do to achieve it. Then you say, when am I gonna do this? This is gonna be in week one, this is gonna be in week two, this is gonna be in week three, and some tasks will appear in multiple weeks. And then once you get to your week one, you're gonna say, okay, let's pull out my calendar. When am I gonna do these three things, or these five things, or these 10 things? Thursday afternoon at 6 o'clock, I'll do these three. Great, put it on your calendar. Now you've scheduled it. Now you're much more likely to accomplish it. So that's what this is all about. So don't get caught up in the mental loops of, okay, I gotta get financing. All right, gonna need to go look at houses, gonna need to do, you know, figure out, I'm gonna go review the contract. Oh, I need to get financing. I'm gonna need to go write a contract and review the contract. I'm gonna need to get financing too. Gotta get it out of your mind. Otherwise, you're gonna keep coming over and doing it in your head and you're gonna get caught up on it. Write it down. David Allen's Getting Things Done, Capture Projects and Next Actions. And finally, you're gonna write a narrative documenting your execution of the activities, achieving your goals and challenges you need to overcome. So once you write out all the stuff you need to do, we're gonna go and pretend a year from now or 3 months from now, whenever it is, and you're gonna look back and say, okay, this is what I had to do. I did this task and it was easy. It was hard for me. These were the challenges I had. This is what I had to overcome. I got discouraged. I came back to NCREG. I talked to Brian. He gave me a great pep talk and now I'm ready to go. It took that a few times, but I was really relying on Brian. You're doing this from the future, looking back. You're writing your story about what it took for you to succeed in detail, anticipating all the problems and challenges you're going to have. Am I naive enough to think that your schedule will exactly match what you need to do to achieve your goals? Absolutely not. Are you much more likely to achieve your goals doing this exercise than, I just want to buy a property this year? Absolutely. All right, so 1 year goal, future narrative process. Normally I'd tell you to go out a year because I know what the goal is for this particular group. It's gonna be buy a house in the next 3 months. That's the exercise we're doing tonight. So for this class, I'm assuming everyone has the same goal to acquire property within the next 3 months. For nomads, you're gonna buy it and move in. For non-owner occupants, you're not moving in, so you could skip steps related to that. All right, so the exercise we're gonna do, I'm gonna explain it to you. We're gonna stand up and put ourselves in the right state of mind, and then we're going to sit down and do it. Does everyone have a sheet of paper? Allison, would you help people with paper if they don't have it? Everyone have their pen? Okay, so here's what's going to happen. You're going to be doing this longhand, and if you are doing this at home and you think you're going to type it out, do not type it out. All the science suggests that doing it longhand, even if your handwriting sucks, makes a difference. So don't shortchange yourself and do it with your computer. The joke I have is, if people ever done affirmations and you're supposed to write out your affirmations by hand, the joke I always tell people is, hey, I went and I solved the affirmation thing. I went and wrote a software program that basically said, I'm gonna earn $1 million, go to print thing 1,000 times in the program, and it basically just print it on the screen. Why don't I just do that then? Gotta write it out by hand, okay? From the future, write down by hand, do not type, a brainstorm list of all the things that you need to do to have bought a home in the next 3 months. It should be a big, disorganized list filled with both big picture things and small details. Go to Freaky Town. The more stuff you write down, the better. The big picture stuff will be a placeholder for expanding into detailed, smaller pieces later. So for example, you might say find a home. If you start thinking of steps for find a home, write those down too, but you may go back later and say, okay, here are additional steps I need to do to find a home. I don't know how to do XYZ. Where do I get the spreadsheet from? You know, how am I gonna get properties? Whatever it is. Capture everything you can think of. At any time during the entire process you think of anything to add, just come back and add it. So when we do step two, if you think of another task, just go ahead and write it down. If there are things on the list that you don't know how to do, create an item of learn how to do XYZ. I don't know how to fill out a lease. I don't know how to get a lease. Figure it out. Go watch the video on leases. Whatever it is you have to do. Only after you're done at home, look at my checklist as triggers for what you may have list. So we have a lot of classes with checklists and stuff like that, and I'm gonna tell you about a whole bunch of additional ones tonight. Don't jump there first. It's better for you to think it through. The exercise of you thinking about what you need to do is good for you. I would shortchange you if I just said, here it is, you're done. Okay? The more times you visualize yourself doing something, the more likely you are to follow through. We're gonna do a little warm-up, so everyone stand up, please. All right, shake your body out. All right, cool, close your eyes. All right, I want you to think about a time when you followed through on something and you accomplished it. something that was hard for you, something that took effort, that you really wanted to do. You put in the extra time. You stayed up late doing things. Think about a time when something was hard, but you pressed on. You wanted to quit. You're like, screw this, I'm not doing this anymore. I could go ahead and tell my friends a story about why I didn't need to do it, or why my goals changed, or how it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and blame someone else. But no, instead, I decided to put my effort in. I decided to do it. I decided to really finish things up and get it done. You persevered. You stuck through. How'd you feel when everything was done? Feel amazing? Feel good? You put in the effort? You knew that it took time? You knew that you were willing to do the work? All right, great. Step into that feeling. Sit down. Let's do the exercise. I want you to write down everything that you need to do in order to buy a house in the next 3 months. Just start dumping everything out. What do you need to do? Do you need to get qualified with a lender? Do you need to come up with down payment money? Do you need to go talk to your parents about down payment money? Do you need to talk to your spouse and convince them to get on board? Do you need to go read through the contract so you know what you're signing? Do you need to go find a realtor? Do you need to find a lender? Do you need to go look at houses? Do you need to get set up an email to receive notice of properties? Do you need to learn how to analyze deals? Do you need to know where to get Brian's spreadsheet from, or do you need to create your own spreadsheet? Do you need to know what the important metrics are to look at when you analyze deals? Do you need to know what you're looking for when you look at a house? Do you need an inspector for when you buy the property to have it inspected? Do you need a sewer guy in order to do the sewer scope? What's that? No, you should write down your own. Keep your own stuff. You have the other stuff. Do you need to understand how negotiating an inspection works? Do you need to know how to read a seller's property disclosure? Do you need to know the paperwork you need to give your lender in order to get qualified for the loan? Do you need a pre-approval letter? Do you need to call multiple lenders to get good quotes to find out what a good interest rate is? Do you need to evaluate whether or not you should buy down the rate? Do you need to know loan programs to find out how much down payment you need? Do you need to figure out when you're going to go look at houses with your job? Do you need to clean up your credit? You need to figure out how to get a loan with a bankruptcy or a foreclosure or a short sale. Do you need to know how to read a title commitment? Do you need to know which title company you want to use? Do you need to go do the Dickens process so that you know you're going to follow through on this stuff? Do you need someone to explain to you how to hire a real estate agent and know what the paperwork is for that, so you don't lock yourself into an agreement you don't want to be in? Do you know how to determine fair market rent? Do you need to know what your insurance quote's going to be? Do you know how to estimate taxes when you're filling out the spreadsheet? You need to know about occupancy laws for different cities. Do you need to know what city you're buying in? Do you need to know about what neighborhood you'll buy in? Would you buy a property with lead-based paint? What's your criteria for a property? How many bedrooms do you need? What's your asset protection plan? Are you buying an LLC? Are you buying as an individual? You need a partner? How are you going to structure your partnership? What do you need to learn how to do in order to be able to do this? Buy a house within the next 3 months. Do you need to talk to your spouse about watching the kids so you can get away and look at stuff? All right, you got about 1 more minute. Do you need to attend Anchor classes or another investment club classes? Do you need to watch videos? What do you need to learn? All right, go ahead and finish up, but you can go ahead and add to this list at any time during the rest of the exercise. So if you think of something else, go ahead and feel free to add it. Just add it to the next page. Add it to the bottom of that page. All right, cool. So that was step one, is write down your list of all the different stuff you need to see yourself doing in order to buy a house sometime in the next 3 months. Okay? So now you're going to grab a second sheet of paper, and you're going to want to repeat this part of the exercise at home for the other weeks. But what I want you to do is take your list of stuff that you have there, and you're going to pick the things on that list that need to happen in week one. What are your very next actions that you're going to try to do between this Wednesday and next Wednesday? Okay? You're going to start thinking about what's priority. What do you need to do in order to move your goal forward? When you get home, you're actually going to go take 13 sheets, and you're going to label them week 1 through 13 on the top. And you're going to pick all the stuff that you need to do, and you're going to put it so that you know which week you need to do stuff. And certain things you're going to need to do over multiple weeks. Looking at houses, analyzing deals, things like that. Until you get a house under contract, you're probably doing them all weeks. For this goal, take the last, when you're doing this at home, take the last 5 weeks in order to have, assume that you got something under contract. So if you're thinking about that, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. So week 9 is your first week going under contract. You assume you get an offer accepted, so put all the stuff for week 1 under contract there. Week 2 under contracts, week 10, 3, 4, and then in week 13, you're closing on your property. So all the stuff you need to do around closing, you put in week 13. The weeks before that are all about looking for properties and finding one. Okay? So certain things you're going to do way early on, certain things you're going to do week 2 or 3 or 4, and you're going to do all that. Okay? So now we're going to do the exercise and do week 1. So in the upper corner, write week 1 there so you know what you're going to go put on there. Use your brainstorm list of everything you need to do. Start to transfer the items from your brainstorm list to the individual pages of the weekly to-do list. This can appear in multiple weeks, for example, looking at houses. Single line through each item on your brainstorm list as you put it on there. Okay? That way you know it's done. So if you're crossing things off a to-do list, keep it readable so you can reference it later for nostalgic reasons, and also if you need to go recreate this and do the exercise again. You'll want a copy to show how you achieve these goals. If new things come up for your brainstorm list as you're doing this, write them down. Just capture them, especially if they're in weeks 2 through 13. Okay, we're going to do another little warm-up to make sure we're back in state. So everyone stand up again, please. All right, close your eyes, shake your body out. All right, think again about a time that you actually followed through and got something done. Something that was hard for you. Something that took effort. Things that you had to stay up late to do. Things you had to get up early to do. Things you had to stop doing fun stuff that you really wanted to do in order to accomplish this. Important goals. It was hard. You were like, I'd rather do something else in a lot of cases. But you decided, this is worth it. I want to put in the effort. In some cases, maybe it wasn't even you that said it was worth it. Maybe someone else sort of forced you or put pressure on you to do that. That's okay, because now you know you felt good about it. You feel great because you pressed on, even if somebody else was the encouraging word, because you can be your own encouraging word. You put in a lot of effort. It was difficult, took a lot of time, took a lot more time than you thought. You thought, oh, this is easy. I'm just going to go ahead and do this. But it turned out to be hard. It turned out to be difficult, challenging. But you decided to persevere and stick it through and actually get it done. Now think about how it felt when you were done. Was it amazing? Did you feel really good about it? Did you feel like, I put in this effort, I kick ass, I was doing it, I got it done. That's me. I put in the effort. All right, step into that feeling, sit down and let's do it. Take your list and transfer it to all the stuff from your list to what you need to do in week one. It's going to be hard. You're going to need to put in effort. It's going to take time to do that. If you think of other items that you need to do, put them on your brainstorm list. What's the first step? What do you need to get done? Is it meeting with a lender? Do you need to know three numbers of three lenders to call? You want to short-circuit the process and find the three best lenders that I know of? Maybe you need to ask your real estate agent what lenders they recommend. Maybe you need to clean up something on your credit before you can get that lender to approve you. Maybe you need to pay off a credit card. Maybe you need to do some bookkeeping and accounting because you haven't done your taxes for 5 years. Maybe you need to finally pay a bill that you've been disputing because it's not worth fighting over anymore. It's stopping you from achieving your goal. It's not worth fighting over $100 when you're talking about millions of dollars in real estate. Just pay it and be done with it. They need it more than you. Do you need to set up automatic emails to get your deals sent to you? These are some of the first steps I talked to you about. Getting a lender letter, deciding what kind of properties you want to buy, what kind of properties you want to be sent. Knowing your qualification, knowing what the price point of what you're looking for is. Coming up with a plan, setting your goal. You know what the goal is, buy a house in the next 3 months. Clearing out your schedule so that you're going to be able to come every Wednesday night to NCREG. Talking to Brian after class for motivation, asking if he'll make you, if he'll mentor you. What are the big steps for you? What's it going to take in week one for you to move forward? How will you know at the end of week one that you made measurable, significant progress toward your goal? Move those items from your brainstorm list to week one so you know. You might need to stay up late to get it done. That's okay. Sleep can wait. Once you buy your house, you'll have some time off. You need to know how to compare two different lenders. What are you comparing? Just interest rate? Do you need to know that you need to do it all on the same day so that you're not getting quotes for different days from different lenders? What do you need to know? Anyone need more time? All right, let's move on then. So the third part of this exercise you're going to do at home is you're going to go take out your calendar. Once you've kind of gone through and put your stuff that you need to do into different weeks, is you're going to take, okay, I got 1 week now. What am I doing this week? Where am I putting that on my calendar? So take each page of your weekly to-do list, transfer the items you need to do to your calendar. You can use electronic calendar. This stuff should be handwritten, but you do not need to use an electronic calendar. At this point, you're just putting it on whatever you're going to use. I'd separate out, make it its own calendar, a Google Calendar, but that's totally up to you if you want to do that. In other words, decide when you'll actually sit down and do the stuff on your list. Specific items, not work on buying a house, but I'm calling my lender at 10 a.m. on Thursday. I'm going to analyze the terms that they sent over at 2 o'clock on Friday. I'm going to send an email to James at blah, blah, blah. I'm going to sit down with James to go over properties on this time. When are you going to do the stuff you're going to do? Make an appointment with yourself. And if somebody needs to change your schedule, move the block to another time. Don't just say delete. Say, okay, I'm willing to do this because it's important and my boss needs to meet with me. I'm going to move this to another time, though. I'm not deleting it off my calendar to get it done. You can adjust your schedule later. You can adjust for things that you overestimate or underestimate time on. Part of the benefit of this exercise, you start thinking about what is involved with each step, how much time it will take you, how many times you'll need to do it to achieve your goals, how often, and other important details. That's part of what this part of the exercise is all about. Okay? Now, step four, once you're done with that, this is where you now have your calendar out for doing this. You're going to look back from 3 months in the future, and you're going to narrate. You're going to write out a letter to yourself or someone you care about. So I might write to Brian, not like I'm going to give it to him, but I might write with Brian in mind. Because I respect Brian, and you know, you pick whoever you respect who's going to be encouraging to you, who's going to encourage you to achieve your goals and kind of enjoy that with you and kind of you know, help you with it in that way. You can do it in your favorite word processor. Write your own success story. Once you've scheduled out your tasks and you can see how to achieve your goals, you'll be writing a letter. Write a letter to me or Brian, someone else you respect and care about and are seeking approval from. Helps if you're seeking approval because you'll be more likely to hold up your end of the bargain to them. Someone who will hold you in the most positive, expect the most from you, and the best out of you. Okay? You're going to document from a year in the future, or 3 months in this case, the story of how you achieved your goal. You'll be narrating it in past tense. When I first started on this goal, I was a little bit scared, but I realized I was going to be putting in the effort, and I knew I could get feedback and get support from people in NCREG. So I started on week one. I called my lender. I called three lenders, and the lenders did this. You're going to narrate it like that. And you're going to say, the first week was the hardest. You're going to tell me the problems you had. I got sidetracked. You know, the Game of Thrones came on, and I was like, I'd rather watch Game of Thrones, but I can DVR that crap and watch it later. I'm actually going to take the time to analyze deals now because it was hard for you. Tell me about the challenges you had to overcome. Tell me about what was easy. This was easier than I thought. I thought I was going to have problems with this, but it turned out to be no big deal. What was hard was this, and here's why it was hard for me, and here's what I did to overcome it. Tell me about what was surprising and unexpected. Tell me about how much work you did. Go into detail. Turns out analyzing deals wasn't as easy as I thought. I watched James teach the class. It looked super easy. It only took like him 15 minutes to do it. For my first one, it took me 3 hours. But I got faster. I put in effort. I got better. I practiced. Tell me about how great you felt doing the work. Tell me about the times you thought about quitting, if you did, and how you persisted and overcame it. What did you have to tell yourself in order to overcome your temptation to quit? Tell me about what you would recommend to someone else trying to do the same thing. Brian, if you're ever teaching someone else like me, I would recommend you tell them this because this actually helped me. It made a big impact. Be encouraging to them. Adjust the narrative and make better distinctions on the path to achieve your goals. So review this. Decide, you know, this turned out to be different for me. I'm going to go back and I'm going to review it. All right, last thing for tonight. Chunking, clarity, and staying out of overwhelm. So one of the challenges with writing down all the 300 different things you needed to write down to buy a property is we tend as humans to say one, two, three, many. And you get overwhelmed when you think about it's many things to kind of accomplish this stuff. So you need to chunk it. What can you do week one? Okay, basically I just need to get qualified for a loan and start receiving properties. Those are two things. I can handle that. Now, what are the steps? You got them written down. Okay? So group them, finding properties, closing on properties, rent property, many more. Whatever you need to do in order to group them appropriately for you so that you're not thinking, I have 7 things to do this week. I have 3 things to do this week at most. And groups, big chunks. And then finally, so I actually intended to be further along on being able to give you basically this version of the checklist broken out by weeks for any nomad that needs to do it. It's going to look something like this, which basically has the task on here and a description of what you need to do for everything you need to do for Nomad for 10 years. That's where I'm heading with this. So it'll tell you how to acquire property, when you, what week you should start, thinking about, you know, doing your next property and finding your tenant and all that stuff. It's going to be amazing, but it's not quite done yet. I've only got about 100 pages of it written, and it's going to be more than that. And so what I probably will do, if you guys remember Christmas last year, I gave you out a book, right, the new book I wrote. I will probably end up giving you a new book this Christmas. It'll be like some checklists on how to do Nomad. And the Nomad stuff, it's almost identical to the other stuff you guys do. I mean, buying a house is buying a house. So basically, you'll be able to use this for anything you want to do. It is available on the website. It's completely open right now. And so eventually, there's going to be a new book. And eventually, there's going to be weekly emails to encourage you. And it'll say, you basically sign up for the service. And there'll be weeks, there'll be emails every week to say, okay, here's week 1's tasks. And you go there and they'll list all of them out for you. Okay? So that's what's coming. But really, you doing the exercise is better than you jumping on and grabbing this. However, I will tell you, if you're too lazy to do the exercise, I will step up and provide it for you. Okay? So I don't want to use that as an excuse as to why you can't do it. But you should do the exercise. Okay? All right, any questions? I'm pretty much on time. Was that helpful?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Any questions on any of the goal setting stuff? Anyone have conflicting opinions or want to argue with me about why I'm wrong?
There was one thing.
Yes, one thing that was wrong with.
One thing that came up, you mentioned that if you tell other people about your goal, it helps you do it.
Yes, public accountability.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that's wrong, but I've heard exactly the opposite stated, where the act of telling people gives you some of the reward of having done it.
Yep. So where I got my source from is Dr. Heidi Halverson Grant in Succeed, and she is a clinical psychologist doing testing. And so she is basing that off of actual studies. And I'm sure that there are studies somewhere that conflict stuff, but that's the one that I'm citing. So I don't know. Oh, so here's an interesting point about this, right? So I sent Brian an article like 3 or 4 days ago. They had an article in USA Today about the 20 best real estate zip codes. And they marked down what the return was for that. And all their returns were 5 to 6%.
Well, that one was like
8. Whatever. So it's like, what are you even calculating such that you think that those are the top returns you could possibly get in the marketplace? So you have an article that something that we know something about, and you read it and you're like, these guys obviously aren't real estate investors because they don't know what they're talking about.
But then if you think about that too, like think about the people that you are going to tell about your goal. Yeah. If you tell peers that like don't know anything about your goal, they're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, cool. But if you tell like peers about your goal, they're going to be like, wait, did you do that yet? Wait, did you do that yet?
Yeah, it's a different, you don't get quite the benefit telling us you're going to buy a house because if you show up every week, you need to do the work.
Yeah,
this works 50% better. Many times that was, we did this test with a placebo and 2 people felt better, and then we did this test with the actual drug and 3 people felt better out of 100. So it was 50% better, and that's what you're getting,
yeah.
Right? The studies are, it's so very easy to distort numbers and stuff like that. So just anytime anybody sends me a study, I'm like, let me see what your sources are. And many times, like, well, we asked 20 people how they felt. Oh, great, thanks. I mean, it's literally, that's what the data is. So I don't know what the data is because I didn't do it, but I
Yeah, just read Succeed and see if you'd like it. That's what I'd recommend. Cool. There's questions?
Just a comment. What I found, because I've been in several situations where I've been setting goals and sharing goals, you have to also, and it might be part of the five people that you surround yourself around, but it's who you select to share your goals with. Are they going to hold you accountable?
Yeah.
Are they going to, support you? Or are they going to say, oh, that's kind of,
totally.
I've had friends, good friends, say, well, that's a little grandiose, or something like that,
There's actually they use the story with the crabs. You put like three crabs in a bucket, and when one crab tries to crawl out, the other crabs will grab onto them and pull them back down. And you don't want to set yourself up where your friends are pulling you back down. You want to set yourself up where your friends are outside the bucket, and they're like, "Hey, it's really awesome over here. Here, just reach over the thing, grab my hand, and I'll help you out." That's what you want them to do. It's helpful in a desert. All right, so was that the world's greatest real estate investing goal-setting class ever? Isn't that what the title was?
My only one, but it was good.
Close enough. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Stick around. You're welcome.